truth and honesty. Where does the golden rule fit in? A saying which has been repeated for a long time in human history is that everyone has their price. The price referred to generally means what is the threshold whereby one would disregard generally accepted morals of honesty and become dishonest. Honesty versus dishonesty could relate to any number of things, but generally speaking, the dishonesty would be in terms of materiality, whereas honesty would be on the side of spirituality. Or one could say moral versus immoral, angelic versus devilish, good versus evil. Certainly, the dishonest side of that equation would refer to the belief that there is life, truth, and intelligence in matter, or mortal mind, or any symbol that represents something that is materialistic. The threshold could even be considered to be variable. If one is attending a smorgasbord where one pays a flat price and the rule is you can eat as much as you like, where is that threshold? Would one overeat because they're paying a flat price? If one is in a gambling casino, would they overeat if they lost money at gambling? And look at this as some kind of a small compensation to try to mitigate their losses in some minuscule way? Or even if one is staying at a luxury hotel and it includes breakfast, in which one is given the opportunity to eat as much as they want, is one going to rationalize to overeat because they're paying a high ticket price for the room or the suite wherein they are staying? How about robbing a bank? Is the threshold different there than on minor things like what we are discussing so far? In the Sermon on the Mount, Christ Jesus included in the Beatitudes a verse that says, "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God." The Bible states that God is a spirit. And Mary Baker Eddy says the proper translation is that God is spirit. She defines spirit as being flawless, no error therein, no impurities whatsoever. If there is one little speck of impurity, it is no longer pure. In other words, you're not going to be able to see God correctly. You're not going to be able to experience a pure life. It is going to be a measured mixture of good and evil, purity and impurity. Wentworth Winslow, which is one of the authors on our website, mbeinstitute.org, received a telegram from someone, and the telegram originated in another country, and it merely said, "Six treatments, please." Mr. Winslow had no idea who the individual was. He didn't know his exact location. He didn't know how to contact him. He didn't know anything about what the problem was that the fellow was requesting treatment on. And basically, he didn't know anything other than there was an individual from another country that was requesting 6 treatments. That was it. That was the sum and substance of his connection with the request. Mr. Winslow is one of our authors listed on the website, and he wrote about 125 different articles, and they were bound into 4 volumes, which he titled, Let God Do It, God Can Do It, God Will Do It, God Is Doing It. If one thinks about those titles and the sequence in which they were published, which is as they were just read, it's very interesting because it falls in line with Genesis chapter 1. Genesis chapter 1 gives us an account, according to the text of that chapter, of creation as viewed by humanity. Mary Baker Eddy translates the first few words where it says, in the beginning. She translates that to mean in the only. In other words, the only creation that exists is a creation as described in the words that follow. It's very interesting to note that that is divided into 7 days of creation, and that matches exactly how Mary Baker Eddy defined God. She defined God as incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. In other words, 7 main key words, each one describing very specific qualities. If one would study the book by Helen Wright, the founder of the Mary Baker Eddy Institute, and that book is entitled Your Divinity Revealed, they would find that there are 7 chapters in there. Those 7 are only a part of the book, but those 7 specific chapters that are referred to, which are chapter 4 through 10, each one relates to a specific term for God, and they're exactly in the order in which the creation is described in Genesis chapter 1. It actually goes through verse 3, chapter 2. In addition to there being a specific order which describes creation, there is a very important sentence in each one that says the word let. And before it describes that God created each of the 7 major things that were created in those 7 days, it says let, and man must let. In other words, one must recognize what is about to be said and be ready for it with an open thought. Mr. Winslow says the same thing in the sequence in the way he published his 4 books. The first one is to let God do it. The second one is God can do it. The third one, God will do it. And the fourth one, God is doing it. So we need to, first of all, prepare our thought that God is able to do whatever needs to be done. And that's the title of the second book, God Can Do It. Then we have to realize that God will do it. And then we have to realize that God is already doing it. In other words, It is like an instantaneous connection in the sequence. It is like a movie. A movie is prepared from beginning to end, and it is recorded on some kind of media, and it is finished before one starts at the beginning to see the movie. So the movie is already produced. The point is, where are we going to begin watching the movie? Are we going to start at the beginning? If so, we have to be having our thought open to letting the movie impress us with the entire story. Are we going to be receptive to whatever's in the movie? Mathematics has 10 digits, which are 0 through 9, and it has 4 operators, which are termed add, subtract, multiply, and divide. Those are the basics. And the purpose of this recording is not to get into any more intricacies of mathematics, but just to give you the idea that there are elements, which are the 10 digits, and there are operators that must be applied to those 10 digits in order to produce a product or an answer or come to a conclusion. Music is the same way. It has its elements, which are the 8 white keys, and of course it has 5 black keys, which are 4 sharps and flats, which are a variation of the 8 regular keys of A through G. Music also has its operators to give you a variety of what the melody is going to be and how it's going to sound, including such things as volume and many other variables. There is a principle in everything that exists. The system of divine metaphysics, which Mary Baker already refers to on page 146, where she says that divine metaphysics is now reduced to a system, to a form comprehensible by and adapted to the thought of the age in which we live. This system enables the learner to demonstrate the divine principle upon which Jesus' healing was based, and the sacred rules for its present application to the cure of disease. So that's page 146 of Science and Health. So, divine metaphysics has a unique system, just as does mathematics and music and many other things. If it did not have a system, then no two people could get the same result, which is healing, from any particular ailment. It would be an artistic thing that it may happen or it may not happen. There wouldn't be anything consistent or something that one could depend upon. I don't care what the color of one's skin is, where they're located, what their educational background is. If they know that 2 times 3 equals 6, then every time they multiply 2 times 3, they will come up with the right answer. Someone else with an entirely different background, different skin color, different location, different education, if they also know that 2 times 3 is always 6, then they will come up with the same answer as the other individual did. When one works in the system of divine metaphysics, they must come up with the same answer that someone else will come up with, because it is a fixed principle. It is not variable. It is not artistic. It is a fixed principle. It is scientific. It always operates the same way. Mary Baker Eddy referred to Jesus not as a man that performed miracles, but a man that was the most scientific man that ever trod the globe. In other words, she said that everything that he did could be explained in a scientific manner. It wasn't a matter of art. It wasn't a matter of special spiritual inspiration. It was a fixed principle that would work the same way for everyone in existence with getting the same result. Just like mathematics, music, chemistry, and many other fields of study that have a scientific basis for the way they operate. King Solomon found this out, who was David's son, the one that slew Goliath. And because he experienced this, he made a statement, which is a verse in the Bible, which says, "Seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you." He ended up being the wealthiest man in the world, even up to this time, measured in today's values. No one, even the one that is considered the wealthiest man on planet Earth, had the wealth that King Solomon had. Not to mention the attitude that everyone that was around him had. The Queen of Sheba visited King Solomon because she couldn't believe all that she heard about him, and she wanted to see it for herself. When she went there, she made the comment that I was not told the half of it, meaning that the wealth that he really had was more than what anyone else had ever explained. And not only that, she was impressed that those that worked around him as servants and so forth all had a presence of joy and gratefulness and a general pleasantness about them that was far different than most of the servants and staff of other people that had wealth. Everyone has probably read the story about the woman that lost her child, and therefore she stole the child of another woman, and it became known to the ones that were watching everything, and so they took the two women and the baby that was in question to the king for a decision. The king depended on the wisdom of God, and the king said, "Okay, no problem. We will just cut the baby in half, and each one of you can have half of it." That was after they were arguing back and forth, trying to convince the king that the baby was their baby. And of course, as you all know, the answer was, or the conclusion of this was, that the real mother said, "You can have the baby. I don't want any harm to come to the baby." So the king knew that that was the real owner. For only a real mother would have that soft heart for the child. Solomon knew that if we seek God first and his righteousness, then all of these things will be added unto us. He thought it was so important that it is a part of his recorded sayings, which have been handed down in the Bibles over the centuries. Now, what would happen if we seek God for the purpose of what will be added unto us? Think about what one of the most successful negotiators of all time said about that. He didn't talk about that in particular, but what he did was conducted his business in a manner that reflected what that said. He has businesses and prime properties all over the world. He dealt with cultures. He dealt with cultures that were so different from each other and also very different from the culture from which he came. But that did not stop him from being able to complete projects. They are pristine properties all over the world and all these different cultures. if one travels to one of those countries and stays in one of the hotels or attends or enjoys one of the golf courses, they can be guaranteed that there is none better. As a result of them permitting the people that patronize them to vote on what they think is the best in the world, his institutions, his properties, his entertainment facilities are always ranked number one. One of the books that he has written and shared his secrets with the public is entitled The Art of the Deal. In it, he explains very vividly that the art of the deal is what has always attracted him to make a deal. In other words, he states specifically that if he was ever enticed by what he thought the profits would be, he was sure that they would have a failure in that venture. He's absolutely certain that it would be a failure. Now, he did end up being a very wealthy man, but it wasn't because he was striving to gain wealth. He was striving to successfully complete a deal that required working with all the people involved so that they would all be satisfied with their participation in the deal. The art of the deal had nothing to do with money. It had everything to do with the golden rule. I can think of no better success in business than that kind of a reason for being successful. In other words, the real success was not the monetary measurement, but the measurement of how people feel about the deal after it is all said and done. If one thinks of honesty as being automatically coupled with the golden rule, one may view honestly from a little bit different viewpoint. In fact, is there any threshold at all? It seems that there would be no threshold. There is nothing in which one would cross the line between honesty and dishonesty. It has been stated by some wise people that if one lacks the best way to gain what one needs is to give. In other words, lack has a solution which is the opposite of what one might think from a human standpoint. One might think it's difficult to give if one seemed to be lacking. But that is exactly the solution. Jesus gave all he had, yet he always had everything he needed. The quote that was said previously from King Solomon, which is, "Seek ye first the kingdom of God, and all these things shall be added unto you," that is really giving. What is it giving? It is giving up a limited belief in what God is. It is cultivating an understanding that God is all, that God is the only power. Mary Baker Eddy defines good in the glossary, which is chapter 17, which, by the way, is the key to the scriptures portion of the textbook. And she defines it as being omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, and omniaction. Omniscience is defined as all intelligence, all wisdom, and all knowing. So think about that. Omniscience is all science And what is the science? The science is having all intelligence, all wisdom, and knowing everything. That's a science. It's not an art. Each one has a fixed principle. Just quickly, mind includes such terms as omni-creative ability, capability, facility, capacity, functionality. And if one combines those things just mentioned with action, then they are able to see the result measured as power. Since God is infinite, there is no measurement of power because it is omnipower. It is omnipotence. It is the only power that exists. Are we using that power when we think about any activity we're involved in? In other words, are we using intelligence and wisdom in the decisions that we make and the research that we do in whatever project we're involved in? If we're not, then we're not using the capability and the capacity and the facility and the functionality that is given to us by inheritance from our qualities as described in Genesis chapter 1. It says that God gave man dominion. We have dominion. We're not subjected to matter. We have dominion over everything. That means over our own experience. But will we expect it? Will we let it be? Will we practice it? Will we exercise the qualities of God so that we can experience it? Mary Baker Eddy says that we are bombarded constantly with suggestions of evil. And she says that we must stand guard constantly in order to combat all of the suggestions. She said we must form models in thought which are perfect, and we must look at those models continuously, just like a sculptor would, or a painter, or anyone else that has a model. That maybe it's a mental model, maybe it's a physical person or a structure that is their model. Whatever it is, we must be looking at the model that has been formed with a spiritual nature so that we can stay on track, on the track of truth. Soul is defined as sense, and substance is defined as spirit. So the only substance that anyone can have that is real has to be spiritual in nature. So if we think about that being the only substance, then the substance of intelligence is spiritual. The substance of anything that we identify must be identified from a spiritual viewpoint. Life must be identified from a spiritual viewpoint. Principle, which is system and structure, must be viewed from the substance of spirit and not matter. Truth cannot be evaluated based on matter. Real truth is of the substance of spirit. How about love? Can it be a materialistic love, an emotional love? Can it be a sexual love, a sensual love in any way? That's not true love. True love is based on the qualities of God. Jesus was not sensual, and yet He is the most loving person that ever trod the globe. He loved everyone. He loved the soldier that was there to arrest him. He healed his ear after Peter sliced it off with his sword. He never exhibited hate except for evil itself. He threw over the tables of the money changers because they were trying to make a profit from those who were looking for God. Attending this service, he knew that was evil. He threw over the money changers' table. He said, "Get behind me, Satan," when he was tempted by evil. Get behind me. Not go ahead and influence me and I'm going to bite. I'm going to open the door and let you in my consciousness. No. He drew the line very distinctly between truth and error, good and evil, spirit and matter, mind and brain. Mind being divine mind with a capital M. By the way, Mary Baker Eddy gave us a new language because when she uses a capital letter to define something, other than if it's the first word of a sentence, of course, then that means that she is talking about God. So if she talks about mind with a capital M, that is talking about the mind of God, not a so-called mortal mind or a brain. And the same with the other six synonymous terms for God, which are spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. So the capitalization to be understood is extremely important. It's the difference between understanding whether she is talking on a relative level about a human viewpoint or whether she is talking about the absolute God, the one and only God. We were talking about utilizing intelligence with the various other synonymous terms for God. Are we using intelligence when we love? If we have a child that is under our care, whether it's our own or we're caring for someone else's child, and let's suppose that they need to be guided, and let's say you're crossing a street in a city, and there's traffic. Would it be love to let the child go ahead and do whatever they want? Or would it be love to hold their hand and control what they do to protect them? We have to do the same thing with our thoughts. We have to protect our thoughts. Our thoughts are dependent on us. One of the quotes that Mary Baker Eddy begins the textbook with, Science and Health with the Key to the Scriptures, is a quote from Shakespeare that says, "There is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so." And Jesus made a statement to John, which is the first quote at the beginning of the textbook, and it says, "Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." Are we focusing on the truth when we let things into our consciousness? Are we accepting evil as being natural? Are we going to dwell on evil? Are we going to dwell on truth? Mr. Rawson, one of the greatest Christian Science practitioners of all time, who constantly performed instantaneous healings, well, the healings were really from the truth, you know, from the fact that truth is reality. But he opened the door to let those healings happen by making the connection. And Mr. Rawson said that one way to pray is to deny the problem as being real. For example, he would say, "There is no," and then whatever the problem is. And then he would immediately hop on to the truth about man. He would say something like, "Man is spiritual, not material." And he'd say, "God is the only power. There is no other power. There is no power that can create this," and then whatever the problem is. you know, like an accident or disease or whatever. And remember that disease really means a dis-ease about anything. So everything that is a discord is a dis-ease. Think about body as being a container of our consciousness. What is in our body? We don't just think about the thing that we've got with legs and arms and all that kind of thing. We think about our entire experience in life as being our body. Whoever we're thinking about is a part of our body. Whatever we do, whatever we say is a part of our body. Everything to do with any relationship, our home, our business, our family, everything about our life is our body. What are we doing with it? How are we thinking about it? How are we taking care of it? Are we nurturing it? Are we nurturing it with spiritual qualities by declaring that our body is a reflection of the qualities of God? It says in the first chapter of Genesis, God made man in his image and likeness. It doesn't say that God made man in the image and likeness of a so-called devil. Jesus proved that a devil was not real. He proved it. Everyone that has a healing proves that evil is not real, proves that the discord is not real, because they're able to disperse it. They're able to make it evaporate. They're able to make it be without power. And they prove that spirit is the power and that matter is powerless. There should be no threshold whatsoever. It is either pure or it is unreal. There is no alloy. They talk about gold being 99.whatever% pure. Well, if it's not 100% pure, whatever you're talking about, any thought, speech, or action, then it is not godlike. It is a mixture of good and evil, and therefore it is evil. It's like having a glass of water, and you drop one little impurity in that water. It is no longer pure water. Think of God being a glass of water that is totally pure, totally transparent, totally clean, with no impurities. You cannot add anything to the pureness of God and still be dealing with God. You're only dealing with God if you're dealing with the purest there is, which is 100% pure. And God is infinite. So it doesn't change to something impure. It doesn't deteriorate with time. It enhances itself with time if we are going down the path of the infinite progression, realizing that that is the only concrete being. That's a statement by Mary Baker Eddy, that infinite progression is concrete being. We want to go down the path of concrete being. We want to pursue the infinite progression of goodness, purity. And if we think about honesty, think about the golden rule. What would we want others to do to us? Are we doing to others what we want others to do to us? If we were the owner of the hotel that is offering, or a restaurant that is offering a smorgasbord, would we expect others to have the behavior that we would like to have ourselves? Do we want to be honest? Do we want to eat normally? Or do we want to really gouge ourselves so that we can get everything we can for the price? Or do we only want to take what we need, which is a normal amount of food for that meal? This can be transferred to any topic one desires. Mr. Winslow, the same one that wrote those four, the articles, 120 some articles that are in those four books, he wrote one called An Anachronism. And it talks about someone going to the pearly gates and seeking God because he ran out of something and he didn't know where else to get it but from God. So the person that came to the door, the angel, of course, obviously, this is a story, and he's very humorous in some of the things that he says, as is Helen Wright in her book, Your Divinity Revealed. In fact, Mary Baker Eddy states that humor and a joyful attitude is very important. Mr. Winslow said that every morning when he gets up, he would sing for a period of time. He said he wasn't sure whether his neighbors appreciated it or not, but that's what he did. And he said he never received any complaints. So I don't know how good or bad his voice was, but his attitude was certainly in the right place. So in this article of An Anachronism, he talks about someone, you know, going to God to have something replace that he thought that he lost, or something he was short of or out of, something that he needed. And the person that answered the door says, I don't know. He says, I'll go talk to God. So he, you know, the individual that answered the door went to talk to God. And he said, we have somebody here that's looking for such and such. And he said, we don't have any of that. And he said, what should I do, God? And God says, well, what do you mean we don't have any of that? He said, we have an infinite supply of everything. And the individual that had answered the door said, but these people want us to replace something that they've lost. We don't have anything that you can run out of that we can give them. Everything we have is an infinite supply. So God said, well, go back and offer them whatever we have and as much as they want. So in other words, they wouldn't let their consciousness accept the fact that God was infinite, that God could solve any problem, and it was not a problem that would be limited in its resource. We have to try to get a better understanding that God is infinite. God is not limited. If we try to figure out the solution to a problem ourselves, we're going to come up short. Because God is the one that is all-knowing. God is the one that is omni-intelligence and omni-wisdom. God is the one that has the creative ability for every need. God is the one with all capacity, all capability, all functionality, all facility. God is the one that is all action. God is the source of the only substance there is, which is spirit, which is flawless and transparent and reflective. God is the only one that is all-seeing. He's the one with the spiritual qualities of seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, and smelling with the substance of spirit. He is the one that is divine principle, that is system and structure, that is always in balance, always harmonious. He is the one with eternal life, the life that multiplies itself, the life that is eternal, the life that has no end, the life that is always harmonious because it is based on divine principle. He's the one with the truth. He is truth, the truth that is always correct, with no error, no mistakes, nothing erroneous about it whatsoever. It's the perfect motive. It's the perfect consciousness. God is all consciousness, and God obviously is love, which nurtures every quality that there is, just like a mother nurtures a baby, takes care of that baby, brings it up until it can take care of itself. That is the nature of a mother. The nature of a father is life. The nature of truth is like Jesus, the Son, who stuck to the truth no matter what came his way. Mary Baker Eddy wrote an article that was entitled Vision. Or it wasn't an article, it was a letter to a student. And the student was asking her for advice on how to heal a vision problem. And Mary Baker Eddy said in the letter, "Are you able to focus no matter what comes your way?" In other words, we are all faced with difficulties. As Mary Baker Eddy said, we are bombarded constantly with temptations of things that are problems. Okay? Temptations, suggestions that we should open the door and let the thought into our consciousness. And then once we do that, it just multiplies itself. In fact, if we are passive about a problem instead of facing it as soon as it occurs, that's exactly what will happen with the problem. It will multiply, it will compound itself. She says that human life is nothing but lie upon lie that has compounded itself for all human history. It compounds itself only if we don't face it. You know, some wise men that were part of the founding fathers of America, they said, "Okay, we have given you a republic. Now let's see if you can keep it." Someone else had said that the way that we lose our freedom is for good men to do nothing when they know that there's something that needs to be done. That's not an exact quote, but a paraphrase of the idea. Is that what we're doing? Heaven knows that America, as well as almost every country in the world, is in very, very deep chaos, on the precipice of total collapse. That's where we are. That's where the human world is. What are we doing about it? Are we taking a stand for truth? Are we taking a stand for the golden rule? Are we treating others the way we want to be treated? Or are we going into other countries and trying to upset their political system and take over control so we can get their oil or their gold or whatever? Okay? Where are we? Are we letting that happen and doing nothing about it? Apparently, the only man in Congress who happens to be a congressional representative, he made a statement in a recent press conference that he had in the last couple of days that he was the only one in Congress. Now, there's 435 people in Congress, if all of them are accounted for. He said he was the only one that has never taken any money from a lobbyist. The only one. One out of 435. And I can believe that because I know one of them that gets up there that had a very wholesome father that had also been in Congress for many years. And the son who is there now was talking against the pandemic. He said, "This is a bunch of fraud." And the person that had brought this whole thing on that he named, he said, "This guy is a fraud." He said, "We got to do something about this." That very man had his wife accept $1 million from the medical industry as payoff. He's there talking about being so pure, and he himself had accepted through his wife's bank account $1 million. So, the individual that made this press conference statement, or maybe it was even a statement in Congress that he was making a talk. Anyway, the point is that he said he's the only one. And apparently no one objected to that, which means that he was right. He was over the target. He was over the target. He was making a true statement. One out of 435 was totally honest and did not accept any money that was a payoff to do what the corporations that are giving the money away, you can call it anything you want. You can call it a bribe. You can call it a donation. You can call it free vacations. You can call it whatever you want. But he says he's the only one that has not taken any money. He's a real fighter. And he is someone who has outwardly claimed that the Bible is a book that he tries his best to follow. And we've got to remember that when there is an individual that is doing a real wonderful job, he may be a messenger of God. We're all messengers of God, actually. We all have our own niche, and we all should be doing it by following the qualities of God. Anyway, we need to recognize that there was no character in the Bible, except probably Jesus. And, well, there's a few characters in there. Half a dozen maybe. But look at King David. He did wonderful things. But he also did one of the worst things anybody can do. It's easy to see it. It's written in there. God doesn't choose a perfect person because there is no perfect human. Because we are all facing the same problems of the belief that we were born in matter. Born out of matter. Born out of the results of material activities, sensual activities, and so forth. So we're all working out of that problem. And we all need to be striving to replace thoughts in our consciousness that are the lie upon lie that Mary Baker Eddy talks about, that has been compounded over the centuries and thousands of years of humanity. We all are working it out. And some of the people that do the very best work were people that had a very colored past. Look at Paul. Paul gave us more writings in the New Testament than you can shake a stick at. He did some wonderful things in his writings that are recorded in the New Testament. And yet he was Saul. He persecuted the Christians before he saw the light, before he walked down the path, before he was awakened. So we can't condemn somebody for their past. I doubt if there's a single person on this earth that has two legs and two arms. Anyway, not a single person that we know, including who we see in the mirror, that doesn't have skeletons. Dr. Fluno has an excellent article on criticism, and it's on our homepage, and it's also in the header. He says that every problem that is inherent in man or comes to man or fallacies that man performs is all due to one thing, criticism. Here it is. We have it in our, we have just three of the thoughts in our header. It says, criticism creates all trouble, evil, prevents progress, prevents experiencing heaven. We have the whole article. It's not that long. It's a page and a half. And we also have it recorded in MP3, which is maybe 5 minutes to listen to. We have it in the header because it's one of the most important things we can remember. Criticism creates all trouble. How can we be more clear than that? Mary Baker Eddy said that she stopped what she was doing several times a day to make sure that she was not pointing the finger at someone to blame them for something, to criticize them. She stopped in order to see the good in everyone. She also prayed three times a day specifically for mankind. Do we do that? Daniel did it. At least we think that's what he was praying for. He was willing to risk going into a den of lions. He knew that that's a likelihood of what would happen because that's what they had declared. Anyone that was worshiping anything besides the king was going to be thrown into the den of lions. They designed that law to put Daniel in the den of lions. Well, he went, and we know the result. The lions had their mouths closed because he had the spiritual atmosphere all around him. He wasn't praying for the purpose of promoting evil, obviously. How about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? The people that threw them in the furnace suffered death because they got too close to the fire, throwing them in there. How about John? He was put in a pot of boiling oil. He survived. And when he was exiled to the island of Patmos, Jesus appeared to him in the flesh and dictated the book of Revelation. How many people know that? Dr. Robert C. Putnam, which is also one of our authors on our website, gave us 10 Bible lessons, which is the result of teaching Sunday school. Well, that's just part of what he obviously learned when he was teaching Sunday school for 30 years. It is the most wonderful synopsis of all of the important events in the Bible. If you study those 10 Bible lessons, that's going to give you all you need. Those 10 Bible lessons have an enormous number of references, all from the Bible, that teach you everything you need to know about the Bible. It is amazing. I looked for 20 years to try to find a good book on the Bible. And all of these ones that think God is, you know, Jesus is God, they don't understand the truth about who Jesus really was. Dr. Putnam, he was a chemist, by the way. That's where he got his doctorate designation. He is the only one I know of that brought out the significance of the Council of Nicaea about 325 AD, NICAA. It's funny because biblical pronunciations are very complex. And there is a video that I studied to try to get the correct pronunciation of just that one word. And I hope I'm right. Maybe I'm wrong. If so, I'm sorry. And use whatever you want, okay? But it's the Council of NICAA. And it's on our website under the author of Putnam. Just, you know, go to the menu and click on the authors. We have over 90 authors. And then click on the Council of NICAA. And all of his books are short. Even the one on the 10 Bible lessons is, I think, 169 pages or something like that. But that council is extremely important because it explains why the evangelicals are promoting what they're promoting. And I don't want to spill the beans. Everyone can go there and research it for themselves. But basically, all of Christianity was corrupted, beginning seriously. It was being corrupted before then, but at 325 AD, that was the threshold where it became totally corrupt. So Christianity from 325 AD until Mary Baker Eddy came along and discovered the real truth about Christianity and Christ Jesus in 1866, we're talking, you know what, 1,300 years. Or, 1,500 years. Well, that was the Dark Ages. And the Renaissance had begun, but the Dark Ages, why were they dark? Because Christianity had been corrupted. It had been corrupted. Different ones tried to clean it up, you know, starting around, I don't know, 1500 or 1600 or so. Of course, the printing press made a big difference that enabled to be able to pass the word along. And of course, now we have the internet, instant communication worldwide. I don't know, maybe it's interplanetary also. But yeah, I mean, we've done a tremendous amount to overcome time and space. In fact, we have a treatment on our website that was just completed about time and space. It says, time and space, no limit in mind. And if one thinks that they have lost something of value, whether it could be a friend, whether it could be money, peace of mind, whatever it is, we have a special treatment that we just finished on that also. It says, lost and found, 3 steps to recovery. By the way, if anyone is interested in the system of divine metaphysics, we've also had a recent treatment we've done on that that explains it in detail so that you can understand what it's all about. Well, I say what it's all about, it'll give you an introduction to it because the study of it is a lifetime study. I mean, it's something that is an infinite pursuit, as is everything about God. In fact, as I referred to Mr. Rawson as being one of the greatest practitioners of all time, he stated that we should never argue about someone else's definition of God or their understanding of God. And this man had tons and tons of instantaneous healings that he was involved in. And he said, don't ever complain or criticize someone about their concept of God. And he probably knows as much about it as anyone that in our lifetime. Well, actually, he's been gone for 100 years. But anyway, he's one of the top ones that had an understanding, as is proven by what he was able to experience. In fact, he authored a book that lists 1,315 different ailments and gives you a short description of the ailment. And then the counterfacts that you can use in assisting you to heal that problem. Anyway, he is really a genius of a man, and he shared his wealth of information with the world. And so he said, don't complain about what other people think about it, because he said, in his view, everyone knows so little about God that we better keep our mouth shut. In fact, I probably shouldn't have, you know, made a comment about so many people thinking that Jesus is God. Certainly the Christ consciousness of Jesus was the consciousness of God at work. And as I said, Mary Baker Eddy stated that he is the most scientific man that ever trod the globe. And I said that if there's one man that really demonstrated God is love, it was Jesus. So we have we being people that are really students of divine metaphysics, have the highest regard for Jesus of any human that's ever walked the globe. We just don't believe that he is God, because we think that God is infinite, and there can't be something infinite that comes out of a woman's womb. Anyway, that's a whole nother topic. Maybe this recording has given some food for thought on different ways to think about honesty and where is the threshold, or should there be a threshold at all? Hopefully it is. And anyone that has any questions, they're welcome to contact us. We have a message system on our website, and it is encrypted. So you can send a message, and if you want us to call you, give us your number and where you're located. If you're in the U.S., we will call you. If you're not, we suggest that we have contact through an instant messaging service. And the most reliable one we know of is Telegram. So we will tell you how we can set up contact through that. The main thing to remember is the statement that really is based on the Bible that Mary Baker Eddy says specifically, and that is that God is all in all. And the first all is a capital A, meaning that God is all source of all reality. And the other is God is all in all. In all means a little a, and that means that that is God's manifestation, which means that all reality is a manifestation of God. So God includes his manifestation just as a painter who paints a beautiful landscape or a sculpturist that performs a great sculpture work or anyone else that does something that is artistic. That artistic product of theirs is part of them. That is their own consciousness being projected into that. And that's what we've got to think about God. God projects his consciousness, and that becomes the entire universe, the entire existence of all existence. And I know we now know there's many other universes, so I won't say the universe. I will just say all existence. All existence is a product of God. And God, as Mary Baker Eddy defines it, and she has many definitions depending on what focus that she's looking at the moment, but the one that is based on the Genesis is that God is incorporeal, no body, divine, supreme, and infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. This means that God is within consciousness and is there, and all we have to do is get rid of self-will, any biases of or influenced by materialism, where we can make a connection, a spiritual connection with the truth about what God is. And as we do that, then our life becomes in alignment with God, and we will have an entire change of atmosphere of everything in our experience. Remembering what Shakespeare said, there is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. And what Jesus told John when he said, "Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." And if we do those two things, then we will experience what Mary Baker Eddy said in the third quote at the beginning of Science and Health, and that is that we will be blessed. Remember, there is nothing but God. Amen.